From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. President Trump said last night that he wants a, quote, smart, strategic, see-through barrier at the border now, not a concrete wall. And he ad-libbed a line in his State of the Union address last night about immigrants.
I want people to come into our country in the largest numbers ever, but they have to come in legally.
Immigration was the main topic. There was much, much more in this speech, though. NPR White House correspondent Tamara Keith was in Washington last night and is joining us from there now. Hi, Tam. Glad to have you on the program.
So glad to be back with you.
So what stood out to you last night? And I realized that the take on the East Coast and the West Coast could be a bit different.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to that clip that you just played, because that was a confusing moment in the speech. The president seemingly ad-libbing something, saying that he wants more immigrants than ever, just legally. That is completely at odds with the policies of his administration thus far. His administration has severely restricted refugees from coming to the country. The numbers are way down. Legal immigration is way down as part of the Trump administration. So that seemed to come from out of nowhere, and we don't yet know whether it is attached to any policy change or not. Now, okay, back to your question. The thing that stood out to me is that there was a lot of language in the speech about coming together, about bipartisanship. And, you know, lots of presidents do that. That's exactly what you would expect after the president saw his party lose the House of Representatives in a pretty dramatic fashion.
Right.
If he wants to get things done, he has to work with the other party. But even in the very same sentences where the president was talking about, you know, working together, he was doing it in his own terms, with his own terms, including, you know, saying that you should choose greatness, which great is like a super Trumpy word. Now, realizing great is just a word, but it is part of Make America Great Again. And so the theme of the speech being about choosing greatness. And he also sort of called out the word resistance as being a negative. Of course, resistance is a term that has often been used by the president's opponents to describe their opposition to him.
As much analysis as there is today about the speech and fact-checking, Tam, the moment that really is headlining social media and a lot of the coverage is the clapping. In fact, the clap in particular by Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, yes. So let's describe this. The president was talking about the record number of women who were in the workforce and female employment numbers being really great. And all of the women in the House chamber, who all of the Democratic women were dressed in white, suffragette white, and the number of women in the House of Representatives was way up, Democratic women, because of this midterm election that was really a referendum on the president. These women, members of Congress, all stood up and started clapping and were cheering. And the president knew that there was another line coming where he was actually going to nod to these historic numbers. So he sort of says, hey, guys, you're going to like what comes next. And then it came next. And Nancy Pelosi was behind him, as is traditional for the Speaker of the House. What was not traditional about this is that typically the speaker introduces the president before the president talks. It's sort of a formal, standard, traditional introduction. The president kind of jumped the gun and just started talking without having the introduction and
right.
without sort of a more formal acknowledgement of the fact that Pelosi is now Speaker of the House for the second time.
I didn't go back to look at whether he seemed to do that intentionally or wasn't paying attention. You have to assume that all of these moments are intentional in some way. But her clap had a sarcasm to it that some people felt was terrific and some people felt was rude and disrespectful. Mm-hmm. I actually have the sound to let us hear what you just gave a really great play-by-play on. So
let's
the president, he had referenced that 58% of the newly created jobs this year were being held by women. And there was emotion that was bubbling on the floor and a lot of movement, which was easy to see because of the white outfits in the women Democrats. So he's picking up on all this and the sort of rumbling cheer, and that's when he says this.
Don't sit yet. You're going to like this. And exactly one century after Congress passed the constitutional amendment giving women the right to vote, we also have more women serving in Congress than at any time before.
So that was a long, long applause.
Yes.
But, Tamara, I want to go back to an earlier moment because the USA chants were an echo of something that came after the president's long list of aspects of what he called the economic boom that is going on, he says, unlike anything before. So this is where the USA, USA started in the night.
America is again winning each and every day. Members of Congress, the state of our union is strong.
Tam, I don't know how many big speeches you've covered, but this speech hit a lot of different nerves. And that's an example. The USA chants meant something totally different in each of those cases, didn't they?
Oh, absolutely. And you can even sort of hear it was more men chanting USA, USA in the first instance. And, you know, just the makeup of Congress is such now that the Republican delegation actually lost a number of women in the last midterm. And the Democratic delegation gained a large number of women. And also a more diverse group of legislators. And so the divide that exists between the parties is really never more clear than when you have both the House and the Senate all crammed into the House chamber, sort of seated on separate sides of the aisle.
Right. Again, I feel like in this situation, we can give more context to sometimes those phrases that end up being short clips played over and over. Mm-hmm. And there is a clip that is being heard and seen in print. And I want to give it the broader context, because on the heels of that USA, USA, the president was still in that sort of victory lap of what he was describing economically. He said something that you are going to hear partially, and now we've filled in the bigger story. So here goes.
An economic miracle is taking place in the United States, and the only thing that can stop it are foolish wars, politics, or ridiculous partisan investigations. If there is going to be peace and legislation, there cannot be war and investigation. It just doesn't work that way.
All right, that was it. That's the line or two you're going to hear over and over. And I think essentially that was the only reference to the Russia investigation.
Yeah, let me add a little context to this, which is it really was like a right turn in the speech. And there were a number of transitions in the speech that were pretty abrupt, but this was one of them where he is talking about the economy and then all of a sudden, quick turn, he is talking about investigations. But I would argue that he isn't really just talking about the Russia investigation there. He was sitting in a House chamber where Democrats now control the House, where they are promising robust oversight of the Trump administration, which is really one of the key constitutional roles of Congress, is to provide oversight. And just today, the House Intelligence Committee announced that it is sort of reshaping how it will approach investigations. The Oversight Committee is talking about its various investigations. The investigations into the Trump administration, Trump policies, Trump himself, are beginning in earnest this week in the House of Representatives. And if you go back to right after the midterms, the day after the midterms, the president held a press conference and was asked about these possible coming investigations and oversight. And he said that if Democrats do that, then it will be a warlike posture or a warlike footing, and that they will just fight and not get anything done. So what he seems to be saying in that clip that you played is both that he thinks that too many investigations could hurt the economy, but also that it would lead to, you know, all of his hopes for bipartisanship not working out. Now, past presidents have been investigated, too. Congress does these things. It is possible to walk and chew gum at the same time.
Well, before we let you go, I do want to know in a general sense how it is to be in this president's press corps and whether you've shifted or changed your approach as a reporter to respond or get the attention of this president.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not personally trying to get the attention of the president so much as trying to help our listeners understand him and his policies and his positions on things. You know, early on, every tweet seemed to be sort of a five alarm news fire. And now it's leveled off in a way. And we are far more discerning about which tweets really are news, which tweets are breaking news, and we do often report on them, but I think not as often as we did in the past. And you know, as his presidency goes on, there is less shock and surprise about some of the atmospherics, and more of a focus on the policies that he's enacting.
I guess it seems at times like a battle to get any question answered by an individual reporter. And I don't know how the hierarchy works in all of that, but you did make that surprise trip to Iraq, I think, over the holidays. So anything else in terms of the behind-the-scenes experience there?
I will try to make it fast because I know we don't have a lot of time, but it was I got a call on the Sunday before Christmas. The government was shut down. Come to the White House right now. Went into Sarah Sanders' office. She told me to leave my phone and my purse outside of her office. She told us that we were going to Iraq, but that we couldn't tell anyone. Basically, the only people I was allowed to tell were my husband and one editor. Christmas Day was a little bit stressful. And then we left Christmas night without having told my kids that I was going. And we were in darkness the entire time. Air Force One was hidden in an aircraft hangar. And we essentially just took off from the aircraft hangar so people wouldn't see it late at night with the shades drawn and the lights off. Landed in Iraq at Al-Assad Air Base in darkness. Departed 3 hours later in darkness. And got back to the States the next day in darkness.
Wow. Happy holidays, right?
Yeah. It was really remarkable, and it was the president's first trip to a war zone. One little thing is that he seemed really grateful that the press corps had come along. He said, you knew where you were going and you chose to come anyway. The reality is that's our job. We go where the president goes. We cover him. And the press pool needed to be there so that the rest of the press corps and the American people could know what the president did and said in his first visit with troops in what is essentially a war zone.
With what you just said, I'm always glad when you have time to join us on Insight, and especially on this morning after such a big address. I'm glad you're with us, Tamara. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for asking me.
All right, we'll do it again. That is Tamara Keith. She is NPR's White House correspondent based in Washington, D.C. You might know last night that the Democratic response was given in Georgia by Stacey Abrams. The Spanish language response was 13 minutes long. It was given live by Attorney General Javier Becerra. It was in Sacramento. And CAP Radio reporter Nadine Sabai was there last night. She's with me in the studio now. Hi there.
Hi, Beth.
So the attorney general went back to high school for this address.
Yes, it was a really interesting place to watch first the State of the Union address in a library filled with 50 students, a handful of parents that were there, and having Becerra be at his high school alma mater to give that speech was really interesting. Actually, a few seconds before he went on the air, he turned to the students and he said, "How many of you speak Spanish?" And all of them raised their hands, mm-hmm. nearly all of them. And so he was speaking to them as well, which was really interesting.
He was a longtime congressman. He has taken on the Trump administration with more than 40 lawsuits filed. So I imagine he was really in a comfort zone.
He was in a comfort zone. This was a speech about immigrants, and it was a speech to support them and to support their livelihood in America. And the push against was the Trump administration, whether it is with the border wall, whether it was with the immigration ban, all of those sorts of things. He was kind of pushing the immigrant viewpoint and saying, we are here, we are strong, and we need to fight against the Trump administration in order to succeed.
Here is a clip, and you'll hear it in Spanish from his address last night.
Esta noche era para convencernos que de ahora en adelante paraba el engaño y la disfunción y que empezaba la cooperación. Lo que escuchamos fue el cansado refrán de construir muros.
So the translation there was that tonight, he says, was about convincing us that from here on out the deceit and dysfunction would stop and that cooperation would begin. What we heard was the same tired refrain of building walls. And there is that point to make. This isn't just a Spanish version of what the president said. This was his opportunity to speak back to what the president said.
Exactly. And he's been very critical of the president. As you mentioned, he's filed many lawsuits against the Trump administration, more than any other state attorney general. And this was his opportunity in Spanish, aired on Univision and Telemundo TV stations, to be able to say what many immigrants are saying, you know, and what many minorities are saying. And so this was his point.
His media coordinators told me that CNN Espanol carried it as well, which
yeah.
means it was a worldwide broadcast.
Exactly.
He did hold a press conference afterward, and he was threatening that there would be a lawsuit had the president made a different decision in this speech.
Yes. He was saying that he was going to sue the Trump administration if they decided to build the border wall
Declare a national emergency.
And declare a national emergency in order to build it. And what he was saying was that that money could be going towards, you know, helping campfire victims and that sort of thing.
Oh, let's listen to that. In fact, we have that clip. This is him from the press conference afterwards.
Certainly, I don't think he has a legal basis to rob money that should be going to the campfire victims or to the mudslide victims who lost their homes.
So at the finish of all of this, was this perceived not only right there at C.K. McClatchy High School in Sacramento, but in a broader sense as a victorious moment for not only the attorney general, but the purpose of the Spanish language response?
I definitely think so. I think for this speech to be aired live on television in Spanish meant a lot, I think, for the Democratic Party and also for minorities across the country to be able to say, we matter. Right. These sorts of discussions and these sorts of speeches matter. We're not just a side tangent.
All right, Nadine, thanks a lot. I'm going to refer everybody to our website for more of your coverage, for photos by Andrew Nixon, and much more about the State of the Union.
Thank you, Beth.
Glad you were here today. That is CAP Radio reporter Nadine Sabai. We do have reaction from some members of the California delegation. Republican Congressman Doug LaMalfa is joining us by phone. And Congressman, glad to have you on Insight today.
Thanks, Beth.
So for your constituents in Northern California in District 1, what do you think was the most important part of that speech last night?
I think the optimism of, what America has always stood for. The president really underlined it well last night. It was a very well-received speech, and I got a tremendous amount of responses from people, you know, from the district saying they really liked it, and that he's pushing in the direction that, you know, most of them want. And, you know, you saw it, the most contentious issue, obviously, lately has been over the border here. That's, you know, part of what the loggerhead over the shutdown was. And so when you see polling last night post-speech, strong polling by both CBS and CNN, which are not known as bastions of conservative support, both showing 76% support for what he was laying out on the border situation with, you know, a strong fence and the other things he's integrating into the discussion, that's a pretty good sign. So, you know, pretty well received.
Certainly, you know, people did hear darkness. Where you hear optimism, others take it in a completely 180 point of view. Going forward,
well, that's where some of them are paid to do that. Some of them are automatically going to be against the president, whatever, no matter what he says. But if you look at it from an American standpoint of the strong economy, great achievement on unemployment, and the regulations that are bringing, you know, aligning those to bring those jobs back home, there's a lot of good stuff that's been happening, and that's a lot of times lost in the volleyball game that is Twitter and the other social media and things like that. So if you look at it from the bottom line, yeah, he tweets stuff sometimes that annoys people, but look at where the rubber meets the road on how the economy's doing and those, you know, our international relations here with the diplomacy with North Korea and our strength with Israel and, you know, improving things with NATO and their responsibilities. You know, there's a lot of good stuff.
One more question, Congressman LaMalfa. What do you think the chances are of, and I'm speaking to the results going forward now after last night's speech, avoiding a government shutdown and reaching some sort of bipartisan deal?
One, a deal that would include border security, mainly defense? Is that what you're kind
yes.
of asking? I'm not optimistic that anything's going to include defense spending. We have, you know, again, about 9 days before this extension closes. I think the scenario I would see is that, you know, Mrs. Pelosi and them are not conceding a thing on having even a discussion. There's a conference committee supposed to be meeting and talking about border security issues, and it's just not happening. So is the president going to be forced to do his emergency declaration he's been talking about? I hope not. I'd like to legislate it instead. He would too. But at the pace of things, he may have to do that, and then the government shutdown or not would be depending, would hinge mostly on can we just fund the government normally outside of the defense barrier discussion. That should be fairly simple, up to just, you know, again, funding the government for another period of time through the fiscal year, whatever it ends up being in the discussion. But if defense is part of it, I don't see Nancy Pelosi conceding a thing on that. So that it heads towards shutdown, I don't think. But I think before the shutdown, I'm likely to believe that the president will go ahead and make the emergency declaration and move the money around that he has the power to do that's already been appropriated in certain areas of defense spending. You know, they still have money lined up to build a runway in Europe. Well, maybe Europe can build its own runway. Maybe other infrastructure in the Middle East. Maybe they can pay for that over there, and we can pay to secure our own border with that infrastructure. So I think, you know, if I had to guess today, it probably goes that direction, unless there's a miraculous amount of cooperation at the table that Mrs. Pelosi and Chuck Schumer both authorize and say, hey, let's get something put together. You do see some of the Democrats cracking on the issue, saying, you know, is this really a winning strategy for us of what they're doing? You know, one of the chairmen of the committee said, look, just give them the money. There's been worse ways to spend the money in the past. Just give it to them. So there is some cracking over there. Will it crack enough to actually have a strong discussion in the next 9 days is really kind of anybody's guess.
So can I just sum up? Are you thinking at this point that another government shutdown is likely?
I don't think it'll go to shutdown because, again, if the president makes his own separate move on funding border fence and security measures outside of having to get an agreement, if he does that, you know, last minute, if these next 8 or 9 days run off without any meaningful discussion of border security, as they promised when the government was reopened and the president, you know, agreed to that 3-week extension. If no progress is made, then more likely he doesn't want to shut it down. He'll probably move to the emergency declaration. I don't know that. So I don't see the shutdown as being really the thing that's going to happen. It'd be maybe emergency declaration combined with a simpler just fund the government measure coming out of the House and the Senate.
Thank you so much for making time for us today. I really am glad to have you on Insight.
Thanks, Beth. Appreciate it.
That is Congressman Doug LaMalfa, a Republican from California's District 1. Congressman Ami Bera is on the phone now. Congressman Bera, glad to have you join us as well.
Beth, glad to be on.
So what do you think were the most important notes the president hit for your constituents?
You know, he started out talking about the things where we could find common ground, infrastructure, the incredibly high cost of prescription drugs, things that we all agree on. And now it's the art of negotiation. I think those are things that matter to the Sacramento region and certainly to my district.
So being a doctor, I'm sure you were listening closely to his description of the aggressive approach to the HIV/AIDS crisis. And today, his administration is talking about early diagnosis, early treatment, prevention, and responding in a crisis mode. How feasible is that this Congress is going to pass money to make that happen?
You know, I'm glad that the president put out that challenge. And yeah, as a doctor who trained back in the early 90s where HIV/AIDS was a death sentence, I think it's an admirable goal for us to stamp this out and get ahead of this disease. And it does start with early diagnosis, early treatment, and also prevention. I'd hope our Republican members take this up and take their marching orders from the president, because I think you'll find a lot of Democrats that are certainly ready to take on this challenge along with childhood cancer, which I think is an admirable goal as well.
Same question I just posed to Congressman Doug LaMalfa, and that is, how likely is it in the next 8-9 days that a government shutdown can be avoided and a deal will be reached with a border security plan?
You know, I think I'm a little bit more optimistic than Doug is. I think, you know, both Democrats, Republicans, House members, and Senate members recognize a shutdown is not good for anyone and no one wins. And my hope is, look, if we can all agree on border security and wanting to keep our country safe, you know, address the drug crisis, human trafficking crisis, then let's put the experts in a room and let's listen to those experts. And if there are certain areas where it makes sense to build a barrier, fencing, a wall, you know, great, let's just do it in those areas where it actually will address the challenge, not fulfill a political promise. If better technology, drones, et cetera, will do the job, then great, let's do that. But, you know, let's stop fighting politically and let's actually try to find that middle ground, and that is a give and take.
Well, your day was jammed with committee responsibilities, so I'm also glad that you were able to make time for us on Insight. Thanks so much, Congressman.
Thanks, Beth. Glad to be on.
That is Congressman Ami Bera from California's 7th District. Let's shift now. Josh Harder, the Democrat who won a tight race in the 10th District, brought a Northern California walnut farmer to the address last night. And afterward, he talked with Cap Radio's Sally Schilling by phone.
Well, I think tonight's speech by the president was really a Jekyll and Hyde approach. Some of those parts of the speech I really agreed with. He made a big call for bipartisan action on things like lowering the cost of health care and prescription drugs, making sure that we're making needed investments in infrastructure. Those are things that I completely agree with, and I really hope that's the emphasis of the next 2 years. There was some other stuff in there that I think has really traced the divisiveness of the administration, whether it was things that were demonizing our immigrants or making points that I think really only appeal to one side of the aisle. And I think that those are the sorts of things that I hope maybe the president will de-emphasize over the next 2 years, because the reality is, in divided government, the only things that are actually going to become law are things that both parties support. And that, I hope, is a lesson the president is going to learn.
That was California Democratic Congressman Josh Harder last night by phone after the State of the Union. And we have reaction from Republican Congressman Tom McClintock. He has represented California's 4th District for 10 years. He, too, talked with Cap Radio producer Sally Schilling.
Absolutely. Walls have been used for thousands of years to impede illegal entry for one reason. They work. When Israel employed a wall on its southern border, it cut to illegal immigration by 99%. We've had some similar success rate where we have erected walls on our southern border. The problem is we have great gaps in them that are being exploited. We have 60,000 people a month now illegally crossing our southern border, president is absolutely right. That has got to stop. Our nation was built on legal immigration. As I said, if we're not going to enforce our immigration laws, history is warning us that countries that either cannot or will not enforce their borders simply aren't around very long.
So you can tell in those four different voices that there is a wide span of reaction to what was said. There is more coverage on our website of the State of the Union address. I want to make one more note, and that is that last night the president highlighted the fight against childhood cancer. He introduced a young cancer patient who was seated next to First Lady Melania Trump. And the president pitched the allocation of millions of dollars more in research funding.
Many childhood cancers have not seen new therapies in decades. My budget will ask Congress for $500 million over the next 10 years to fund this critical life-saving research.
It can take tens of millions of dollars just to move one drug through trials to the treatment stage. You might know about the documentary, The Not Dying Girl. That traces the life of a young woman from Elk Grove, Lauren McCullough, and her fight against childhood cancer. That program airs multiple times this week on KVIE Channel 6, including it's airing tonight at 7, and after that, the show will be posted online at kvie.org. There's much more at capradio.org, including links to politifact.com and politifactcalifornia.com. It's all there, and you continue to listen to Insight on Cap Radio.